The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Yo, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Kinda Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kinda Funny. Of course, I'm one of your hosts, Snowbike Mike, and today I am joined by both of my gaming dads, Mr. Paris Lilly. Welcome back for another week on a Tuesday, homie. Yeah, how are you feeling today?
I'm good. Got to get used to the new recording time. I almost forgot. I'm like, oh wait, we're recording today.
New recording day. We're back again for all of you on a Wednesday. This is posting around the globe for each and every one of you. Not your Saturday mornings anymore, but you get the midweek blues with all of us. We'll bring you the energy and the fun. And Paris, I'll tell you, I have a lot of energy on a Tuesday. You know, you catch me at the beginning of the week, I'm ready to take on the world. Friday at the end of the week, I was ready for all of us to hit the end record and get out of here each and every time. Now, of course, Paris, we have to be joined by Gary Witta. And Gary, for the next couple of weeks, I'm making the intro all about you. I know you have something very special to promote. And I know that, like, maybe our XCast listeners can get just a little bit of a tease ahead of each and every twitch.tv/Gary Witta stream where we'll be talking about Gundog. So promote, and let's talk about the fun that we should have this week.
I'm still getting used to this time slot change. It's a very different Tuesday afternoon and Friday afternoons are a very different energy. So it is taking me a minute to adjust. On this occasion, though, it's actually handy for me because this, you know, the show goes out on a Wednesday. Wednesday nights are now when I'm going to be doing this Gundog experiment. Where I again, just real quick, because I know we want to get on to talk about why people have actually tuned in and Xbox stuff. But I adapted my own science fiction novel that's coming out later this year into like a 9-hour audiobook with Shannon Woodward from Westworld and The Last of Us and music by Austin Winery. It's really, really cool. Chopped it up into 9 1-hour long episodes. And if you're listening to this on Wednesday, you can actually come by tonight, 7 p.m. Pacific, twitch.tv/Gary Witta. We're going to do the live first broadcast with the season premiere hour long episode. And we're going to do episodes live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. for the next 9 weeks. It's a 9-episode season. And if you can't catch it on Twitch, then you'll be able to catch it on my YouTube channel. There'll be like an archive version there, youtube.com/Gary Witta. And then when the audio series is done, when the live series is done, we're going to put it on podcast services as well. So you'll be able to listen to it that way. So no one's ever done anything quite like this before, kind of basically publish an audio book in like episodic chapters to a live audience. I have no idea if it's going to work, but we're going to have fun finding out. And thank you again for the plug. You're a good friend.
Heck yeah, Gary. You know, each and every week we're going to be talking about Gundog. And I guess I should ask you a follow-up, of course. This is going live to everybody on Wednesday night. You will be doing the premiere, episode 1, chapter 1. Do you want to give us a little teaser right now to get people excited to tune in later this afternoon? Or maybe if they missed it later on in the week, what can we expect from part 1 of this?
Well, I mean, the whole story is, without giving too much away, it's kind of a mashup of a lot of my favorite stuff. It's like kind of half Book of Eli, half The Last Starfighter with giant mechs. If that appeals to you, if that concept appeals to you, I think you'll like it. Kind of post-apocalyptic, post-alien invasion. It's really fun. It's definitely got a lot of that kind of big giant robot energy to it. The whole thing is just kind of a big kind of popcorn empowerment fantasy, kind of young woman who escapes from an alien prison camp and discovers this giant war machine that she can use to kind of take back the fight to the aliens that came and conquered Earth decades ago. It's a lot of fun. It's very pulpy. It's very popcorn. Shannon does this incredible performance, and we have a very, very special mystery guest actor as well, who I haven't announced yet. I want people to see if they can guess the voice. You'll get a kick out of that when we find out who else we got to come do this thing with us. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, twitch.tv/Gary Witta, 7 p.m. Wednesday nights. We'll have a live crowd and we'll do the audio, and I'll be there to answer questions and do kind of a Q&A book club every week for the 9 weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds exciting as can be. If you need some VO work, Mike and Paris are here for you. I have one voice, Gary, But Paris, he has range. So
man of a thousand voices.
If you need us, we're here for you, Gary. But of course, everybody tune in twitch.tv/GaryWitta for the fun to begin. That is later this evening if you're listening on podcast services and over on YouTube. But enough of that. Let's jump in to all the fun Xbox talk that we got for you on today's Kind of Funny XCast, because this is the Kind of Funny XCast. Each and every Wednesday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time, we post for you over on YouTube.com/KindOfFunnyGames, RoosterTeeth.com, and of course on podcast services around the globe. Don't forget, the team here at Kind of Funny are now Epic Games partners, which means you can use our Epic Creator Code at checkout anytime you're buying a game off the Epic Games Store. If you're buying V-Bucks for Fortnite, or maybe you're upgrading your look in Rocket League, please consider using our Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny at checkout to help support the team. And talking about support, we want to give a big shout out to those who support us over on Patreon, whether you're watching right now on the live chat here on a Tuesday afternoon. Shout out to PSWE, Omega Buster, and of course, Cooper for watching live. And of course, thank you to our best friends who are the Patreon producers for the month of August. Thank you to Fargo Brady, Delaney Twinning, James Hastings, and Casey Andrews. Of course, this week, the Kind of Funny XCast is sponsored by Chime and MeUndies, but I'll tell you all about that in just a little bit. Guys, we have some fun ones. And to kick off the stream, kick off the podcast, I wanted to talk to you guys about the Nemesis system, because it's one rad video game system that we don't get to see used much, because it is a very special system dedicated to those awesome Shadow of War games. But there was a modder out there who created the Nemesis system for Skyrim. Reported today, creator Cyclonix created the Shadow of Skyrim Nemesis, an alternative death system mod for players to enjoy with their Skyrim playthroughs. Of course, what does this do? It turns every enemy who defeats you into a nemesis with a unique name, increased stats, and special buff. It gives the player situational and random debuff upon defeat, allows your nemesis to take your gear and use it against you, and it gives players a quest to track down your nemesis. So really cool to take that system modded into Skyrim, which is, of course, one of the best games ever, and really cool to see this. But I needed to know, what did your guys' thoughts on the Nemesis system when you first used it and played it over in the Shadow of War series? And then what game would benefit from a Nemesis-like system? Paris, I'll start with you. What do you think of the Nemesis system, first off?
I think the Nemesis system is great, but remember the conversation we had last week about games that we've not played?
Oh, okay. Lay it on me.
I've not played it. I never played it. I obviously I've heard great things about it, and I've heard great things about the Nemesis system, and you know, obviously the innovation that it brought to gameplay. But I never played it. It was something that got on my radar at the time that I jumped in to and played. So unfortunately, I can't comment on the first time I played it. But to see it come into Skyrim and be a thing in that, I think that's pretty cool.
Pretty rad, is right, Paris. Let me sell you on one of the best games around, because if you like Lord of the Rings and you like Assassin's Creed, you got to play these games, because man, oh man, it's truly incredible. I love the parkour. I love the combat system. I love being in the Lord of the Rings world. And I thought 1 into 2 was a blast. There were some issues with 2, you know, you got halfway through the game and then they were like, guess what? You got to do the whole game again, taking over all the camps. And now the orcs are like 3 times your level, maybe buy new orcs. And you're like, no, I don't want to buy, because I just played like 40 hours, and they're like, okay, well, you can do it again. No, you know, here, there, they fix it eventually. But the Nemesis system, truly awesome and really special, because I did love the dialogue of the Nemesis system, of those people remembering you, talking with other different lieutenants and them remembering you and what you did. That was really cool. And so, yeah, I think of a game like Halo Infinite, to me, Paris, where we did see, you know, the high value targets. That would work so well, because I remember dying to a couple of those elite brutes before, and it would be awesome to see them raise in the ranks, maybe get a special name on that health bar above their heads and see something like that. So I think a game like Halo Infinite would really benefit from something where that enemy remembers you and you got a little grudge with them and you got to get back after them. Gary, the Nemesis system to you, what game would you like to see implement that or maybe try it out in their world?
Well, first of all, I should say that, like Paris, I've never played the games, the Lord of the Ring games either. But it's the internet. Who needs an informed opinion? I can just run my mouth without knowing what I'm talking about. I do remember reading a lot about the Nemesis system in the games. It was the one thing that, like, those games I don't think were necessarily that successful in their own right, but it's the one thing people remember about that games, right? It was like the hit feature that kind of broke out. I'm actually kind of surprised that it hasn't proliferated more, because it's such a cannibalistic industry, right? Someone hits upon a bright idea, and the next thing you know, like a year later, everyone's got their copycat version of it. Look at what happened with Battle Royale, right? There was like a couple of games came out of the Battle Royale space, innovated in that genre, and now every game has to have, you know, Battle Royale, and it dominates the FPS space. So kind of surprised that it hasn't proliferated more. I would say it is definitely something that appeals to me personally, because I have an epic ability to bear a grudge. Like I don't forgive and I don't forget. So I have many, many nemeses in real life. The idea of having them in a video game as well is very appealing to me. I don't know if it's really that similar or that analogous, but the one thing that I think you'll respond to, Mike, because I know we've both played this, is I feel like there's more of an opportunity for this to become a thing in the PvP space. I love that invasion feature in Sniper Elite 5, when someone else can come into your game and start messing with your gameplay. I don't know if you've ever been an invader, Mike, or had your game invaded, but when my friend and I would play, like, we were like deep in the middle of a mission. We were like totally focused on the mission. And then we got invaded and someone started taking pot shots at us. You immediately drop everything, right? All you care about is that invader. And it's the idea of like having those kind of personal grudges and like personal little kind of micro dramas that play out between, you know, player A and player B, or player A and like NPC B, as it was in the Nemesis system. I think it's a very clever idea, and I'd definitely like to see kind of more implementation of it, both in PvE and PvP.
Dang, Gary, that's good. I'd like to build off of that, Gary, because now you got my brain thinking here. It would be cool to make a Nemesis in Sniper Elite 5, where I'm thinking about you, Deathloop, and how that played out, right? Where it's like, oh, Paris keeps getting the better of me, and like we're Nemesis. Yeah. Where like if Paris logged on, he would see me playing, and it's like, oh, your Nemesis is playing, and they're open to be invaded. And I would love that feeling of like, oh, he's back, or like I gotta get after them. I'm gonna load into their game. That could be a ton of fun, Gary. That's really cool. I'm sure someone in the comments will correct me, but there was a multiplayer shooter that I played. I don't know if it was Halo or something, but I always felt like there was one game that was like, this is the person you killed the most, and they killed you the most. And it would just show you their name at the end of the stat tracker. Yes. And that's one that I would love to see. That one always got me too.
Yeah.
When we're talking about rivals. BJ Bernardo in the live chat right now says, kind of funny games, perhaps a version of Forza Horizon. I like the idea of having rival races or racers. I'll tell you, I love banging into Gary and Paris and Phil Spencer whenever I'm driving against their driver tars. That would be kind of cool. Have some rival racers there. Yeah,
the Burnout games. I mean, Burnout Revenge was all based on the idea of having those kind of personal grudges between other racers.
Yes. Barrett, of course, our producer and director of the show, you can help me and chime in on this. I believe Assassin's Creed Odyssey started to build on something very similar to a Nemesis system. I know you brought up WB had patented that system, and they kind of did something similar, but not really. What did you think of that system?
Yeah. It was early last year that WB finally patented it, the Nemesis system, which again is still so wild since when the first game had come out. What was that, like 2014? And they took 7 years to patent the idea. And somehow in those 7 years, we never really saw anyone else like really copy it and implement it the same way that they did. Odyssey, you had a couple different systems. There was the Cult of Cosmos, which were not really the same thing. You had to find clues across the world to uncover the secret cult. And then on the other side, you had the mercenary rankings, which was very, very surface level if you want to like compare it. It's like it's similar, but it wasn't exactly the same. Like you started out as like a, you know, there's like a ranking essentially of like the best mercenaries throughout Greece, and you would kind of slowly kill your way up the mercenary ranks, and essentially like you didn't become a better mercenary by like doing missions. You would just kill other mercenaries, and sometimes they'd hunt you down if you were in the in their territory. If you were like wanted, a couple of them would be sent after you and stuff like that. It was similar, but I don't think it was really as in depth as the Nemesis system in and of itself. But that was fun. But it definitely, playing through it, you're like, ah, this is definitely surface level compared to the original thing.
Yeah, I remember that system a lot because, you know, my wife played Odyssey to Death, and she was ranking her way up through those mercenaries. But you're right, that to me felt more like just like a series of mini bosses, like side quests, little things you could do rather than...
Yeah. Mr. Hawks in the chat,
Lord of the Rings game, I think is better.
Yeah, Mr. Hawks points out in the chat, like once you defeated a merc, like they were gone. Like they don't come back. There's not like a rivalry that builds between you and stuff. You're right, Gary. It is just kind of a series of mini bosses. But if you get to the number one rank area, you get this like really cool looking scary horse, and it's dope as hell.
What a game that was. Well, yeah, my mind goes to a lot of open world action games. Try to think of games like Crackdown, Batman, Sunset Overdrive, benefit from those, but I love Gary bringing up the PvP aspect, and I would love to see that incorporated and somehow made a little fun with that. I think our Sniper Elite idea, Gary, is the right way to go.
For sure, yeah.
On that one. But let me know down in the comments section below for our fun icebreaker of the week. Where would you like the Nemesis system to go, and what game, and how would you implement it? Of course, shout out to that modder out there, Cyclonix, for making the Shadow of Skyrim mod that is available now for you to join and play on your Skyrim. WB, don't take that down because it's different and not the same. Let them have fun.
And it's amazing like how this like still such an active mod scene for Skyrim. I saw a thing yesterday that someone got Skyrim running on a pregnancy test. Like, it's absolutely absurd.
The pregnancy test
had this tiny little kind of like dot matrix LCD screen, and they had Skyrim running on it. It was mad.
Did you see the latest one where you can play with up to 8 of your friends?
Mm-hmm.
That would look really cool, Gary. Yeah. I'd like to play that. I think it takes a little bit, but I would like to do that. And I think that's when we talk about in the future, we talk about Starfield and what that's going to look like with mods, right? You think of those 1,000 planets and what people are going to be allowed to do and what they can do with the mods. I think that gets me really excited for what the future is with the Bethesda games and what the modding world would look like. So
when I'm in the retirement home playing the Starfield 20th anniversary mega gold platinum edition or whatever it is, because you know it's going to have the same kind of long tail as Skyrim, right? We're going to be with that game. Those Bethesda games are like herpes. Like they're there for life. You've got them for life.
Oh yeah, Tuesday episode is going very well, everybody. Get excited. I will get Paris involved in that one. Paris, do you think Starfield will have the legs like Skyrim, right? Like, we don't really people talk about Fallout 4 and like some people play it, but not to the level that of like Skyrim and the generations that we've had. Do you think Starfield will have that staying power like Skyrim?
I don't want to be definitive and say yes. Okay. I want to say I'm sure that's the hope.
Okay.
I'm sure what they're attempting to build with Starfield, and eventually when the mod community comes in, and because what is it now, I'm forgetting now, 1,000 planets or whatever it is, I forget the exact number, it's a lot that's coming in. Imagine modders coming in and actually coming in and making these handcrafted planets that you can explore and discover stuff and do all these things. I would imagine that's the ultimate goal, to have it have legs past, you know, the initial launch and, you know, expansions and DLCs that I'm sure that they're planning for it in its first few years. So as long as Starfield is engaging and meets the promise of what, you know, they're obviously trying to sell us on, I absolutely think it could. But, you know, that still remains to be seen. We'll obviously see middle of next year if it lives up to that.
No doubt. Shout out to that Bethesda team as well for getting the mods on console. I think that was a big one, especially growing up, of like looking over and knowing some of my friends on the PC side were messing with the mods, and console, you couldn't do that. And then they were able to figure that out and bring them over to the games and make them so easy to use. Shout out to that. But guys, we have a really fun one here. Actually just started a whirlwind on social media before we started recording. So write this down as you listen. 3:45 in the afternoon on a Tuesday. Let's see how this pans out. But Twitter has gone ablaze because a friend of the show, Chloe Brielle, the squirrel on Twitter, you've seen them in Xbox Insider, has shared an image of Elden Ring store page that would allow you to play via the cloud. Now, of course, we do know that Team Xbox is doing their best to start allowing Xbox users to start playing their full library of games via the cloud that aren't on the Game Pass collection. But we have now seen other reports of other people now bringing it up, saying that there is some confusion because it could be coming to Game Pass Ultimate. As you see the logo, if you're watching on YouTube, or of course, if you're listening, there is a logo of the Game Pass on that with Elden Ring and a Play in the Cloud logo. as well. Now, of course, there is no official confirmation on this Tuesday afternoon of what's happening quite yet, but it is something to keep an eye on. Now, the Game Pass counter team over on Twitter as well has reported that they see GTA 5 and Soul Hackers 2 available on the cloud and possibly in Game Pass. So, Gary and Paris, I turn to you. Gary, Gamescom right around the corner. Is this what you want to hit the fans with, an Elden Ring Game Pass announcement, or even just able to play in the cloud?
So I heard about this right before the show when we were discussing it, just when we went live. So it's still very new. Not quite sure how to unpack this or what to make of it just yet. I mean, I think I'd be surprised if Elden Ring showed up on Game Pass. I mean, not, you know, even though Game Pass has the, you know, this well-earned reputation for debuting titles that you might, in another universe, you might think too big for Game Pass. Nope, they're on Game Pass, and they've done this amazing job of bringing these AAA titles, and obviously not just the Microsoft ones that we know are kind of baked in, but from third parties. That's been really, really impressive. But in terms of something like Elden Ring, which, you know, clearly is one of the biggest, if not the biggest game of the year, I think is probably almost certainly nailed on for, you know, for the game of the year. It's certainly going to be a major contender. It's going to hoover up a lot of awards. It's big, 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 big. I think if it were to go to Game Pass, it probably would be the biggest third-party title yet to do so. I don't understand. I don't know how the economics of Game Pass works. You know, Microsoft are very opaque about that, and rightly so. It's like a whole, you know, business plan that they have, and they play that very close to their chest. I'd be fascinated to kind of take a deep dive inside the economics of it. Like, how does it work for Microsoft? How do they make money? How do developers make money? I know that for indies, it can be very advantageous, is what I've heard from some developers. In terms of a big game like Elden Ring, though, which has already proven to be a sales juggernaut, I mean, some of this is already established, right? Like, there's a game comes out, it's a bespoke, you know, kind of typical, you know, a la carte, you know, $60, $70, and you buy it at retail, you buy it through Microsoft Store, it's not in Game Pass, and it has its day in the sun. And then as sales start to kind of, you know, trail off, maybe it goes to Game Pass and gets a second wind there. But Elden Ring is still very much, I feel like, in the middle of its like first life cycle, right? You feel like it would be premature for it to be going to Game Pass unless, you know, Xbox is kind of backing up the money truck to say, like, Elden Ring's such a flagship third-party title, we want to be able to kind of, you know, bag some bragging rights on it, like, oh, you know, only available, you know, on Game Pass, other everywhere else you've got to buy it. So I think it, again, I don't understand the economics of it. All of that though distills down to me saying I would be genuinely surprised if it showed up on Game Pass anytime soon. At the same time, Game Pass surprises us all the time with what shows up there, so who the hell knows.
Paris, so, Game Pass is all surprised. What do you think?
Yeah, so like I said, this is literally coming hot off the presses, and it's basically in Rumorville, so who knows what's true and what isn't. So I read it completely the opposite of Gary. I don't think it's coming to Game Pass. I think this just might be the kickoff of them allowing you games that you digitally own, you'll be able to stream from the cloud if you have Game Pass. I think Game Pass is the prereq here. Whether the game's inside of Game Pass or not, you'll be able to stream it on the cloud unless it's something that's free to play, which we've obviously already seen with Fortnite. I just think this is just expanding the library and the platform by allowing cloud streaming, you know, to be with more games, obviously third-party games that are in the Xbox ecosystem. And what a game to add, which is arguably, like, it ain't even arguable at this point, the game of the year for 2022 is going to be Elden Ring. So to have that, to say, hey, if you own it on Xbox, you got Game Pass, you can go stream it from any device you want via the cloud, as they expand that out, I think from a marketing PR word of mouth standpoint, that is a feather in their cap as they continue to try and get more people into cloud gaming. Here's the biggest game of the year. We're going to let you stream it from the cloud. All right. There's a couple prereqs to it, but you can stream it from the cloud. So that's how I read it. Obviously, look, we both might be wrong. Who the hell knows what this is going to be? But that was what I took from it when I saw it.
The interesting thing that I didn't even realize, because you had in your notes here, Mike, GTA 5 and Soul Hackers 2. The thing is, like, you know, with Atlus especially, and Atlus being owned by Sega, you've got the Yakuza games on Game Pass. The Persona games are coming to Game Pass as well. And Atlus is the one who makes Persona, and they're the developers behind Soul Hackers 2. So it's also one of those things where it's like, maybe they're like fully in now as well. And like, maybe I'm just trying to think of like, does this give it like any sort of ground of like, if Soul Hackers is coming to Game Pass, is that also, do we also see Elden Ring coming to Game Pass? Are we getting a couple of like little tidbit leaks here of games that are coming? It's interesting.
Yeah. It's really exciting. I mean, you both bring up good points of like in Game Pass or just via the cloud. When I look at Elden Ring, right, you talk about the game of the year contender. It's looking like it right now. Everybody's talked about it, but we're also hitting that point in the life cycle, right, where we are 6 months after release. Gamescom is the end of the month, so we'll be nearing that 7-8 month, whatever you want to call it, and we're kind of hitting that lull. This is that big second wind, right? Because I don't see a DLC on the horizon this calendar year. Maybe I'm wrong, but when I look at Elden Ring, there's no DLC in sight. So that means we'd look to Game Pass, a mega announcement, even if it's just like you said, Paris, just on the cloud. That's a big win for Xbox. Also, massive news cycle rotation if it is on xCloud. And then on Game Pass, it's even bigger of a win. You get even more players to jump in and give their opportunity to play it thanks to Game Pass. And that second win coming towards the second half, people don't forget about you for the Game of the Year talks, which, let's be honest, nobody is going to forget about them. But, you know, you'd like to be there for the second half, especially up against God of War coming in November. So seems like a big win. I mean, I would turn to you then, Barrett, once again. I look at Soul Hackers 2 that just released in, what, late August? Or that's,
it's coming out next still week, coming I out. Think. Yeah, we just so, did a preview of it on Gamescast.
When you look at Gamescom, that's August 24th through the 28th. That's like almost lining up with a day and date release of this August 25th. Is that going to be the thing to do this? I guess for you, Barrett, is this game big enough where it will stand alone without a Game Pass, or would it benefit exponentially with a Game Pass subscription?
So I just looked it up just to be sure. It comes out August 25th, and you said when's Gamescom?
24th through the 28th.
I mean, yeah, you could kick it off. I don't know if it's going to be like if Soul Hackers 2 does come to Game Pass and they announce it at Gamescom and all that stuff. I don't know if it's going to be as big of a pop, but I do think it would be big for that, for both Atlas and the game in and of itself, just because, you know, especially with Atlas games, like not really having a lot of history on Xbox, it gets a bunch of people in who have been interested in Persona, interested in whatever Atlas is kind of up to be like, all right, hey, like, let's actually check out and kind of, see what their kind of game formula is all about. And, you know, we previewed the game on Gamescast last week, and we, Bless and I, said it's kind of, it scratches that specific Atlas JRPG itch. So if you're looking for more of that, like, this will definitely hold you over until Persona 6 comes out in like 6 or 7 years at this point, right? And so I think that would be big, especially with Persona 5 Royal, at least we know, coming out in 2 months to Game Pass. You could open, really, like, get that, like, ball rolling of getting people, more and more people hyped of, like, okay, like, get Soul Hackers 2 on the subscription, get people to understand what their games are like, and then, you know, have the best reviewed game from Atlas dropping on the subscription service in a couple months. I could see that definitely happening, especially, like, looking at how that all lines up, for sure.
Pretty exciting stuff. I mean, keep an eye out. This is all just hot off of the social media mill, so we don't know if this is rumor, if this is real, where this will fall. But you do know that at the end of the month is Gamescom. If this is to be believed, you would have a great kickoff of Elden Ring, possibly GTA 5 and Soul Hackers coming to just being able to play via the cloud, or maybe even Game Pass could bring a lot of energy for the end of the month, especially here in this drought of first-party games that we've continued to talk about throughout the year.
Can I just add one thing on the Elden Ring cloud conversation?
Hit it, Gary.
So coming back to what we were talking about last week, because we talked about cloud gaming last week, and I'm not sure if I'm right, but I may even have mentioned Elden Ring in this context. And I was talking about how, like, for cloud adoption, like, the last games, or the last category of games, or the last category of gamer that I think will really embrace cloud gaming will be the Twitch gamers. Right. Like and I don't mean the service. I mean, like, the people that play, like, very twitchy, very sweaty games, you know, that require kind of split second timing. And you know, you want like really, really high frame rates and peak performance to make sure that you can, you know, perform. Like if you die to a boss, it's your fault, not the fault of the hardware or whatever. Microsoft must be very, very confident, I think, at this point in their cloud architecture, if, and again, it's a big if, they do bring a game as high profile and as twitchy as Elden Ring, you know, to the cloud. Because like, I would say, like, if you're going to play Elden Ring over the cloud, you better make sure you're living next door to a Microsoft, you know, Azure data center, or at least very close to one, because you're not going to have any margin for error. Again, one thing I know about Elden Ring is that when you're fighting those bosses, you need like crackerjack timing, right, on your dodges and evades and stuff like that. Like, imagine a situation where you've got like a boss down to one shot and you've got almost no health left. It's like the boss or you who's going to get the next hit. And you lose on that boss because there's like a millisecond glitch in the cloud or whatever, you're going to burn your fucking house down. So you better be very, very confident in the cloud holding up with games like that that require that crackerjack timing. And I want to believe, again, I think it's a good sign if indeed Microsoft is bringing a game like that to the cloud, because if there isn't issues with the streaming performance, you're gonna hear about it with a game as high profile as Elden Ring. So I think there's that whole equation to consider as well.
As someone who plays competitive multiplayer on the cloud for Halo, which my friends hate me for, it's not perfect, Gary. That input latency is definitely there. So yes, I'm a little worried.
Is that what you blame me on these days, Mike?
That's what I blame it on. I go into bed and I play it with my friends and they say, Mike, you suck. And I'm like, well, I'm playing it on the cloud. Don't worry about it.
It's the goddamn cloud.
Yeah. You're right, Gary, right? Input latency is definitely a thing when it comes to cloud. And when you look at a game like Elden Ring, I think Paris always says it best. It's a great option and a great alternative for you to be able to jump in and experience the game that you love, maybe take it with you. But yeah, you're right, Gary. It's going to be a nail-biting experience knowing that at any moment this could flub and you would have a bad time for sure on that. Let's keep it rolling with Game Pass, because you two, hey, you guys have hyped up the family Game Pass, and it seems like Xbox has heard you, and we are making moves to make this happen right now, because Family Game Pass is now being tested in certain markets. So right now, currently available for Xbox insiders in Colombia and Ireland. Now, mind you, Tom Warren, thank you to you for putting it into American dollars. $25 a month for five people, all must be in the same country, is what it seems to be adding up to. Looks like you'll get Game Pass Ultimate level of benefits as well. Paris Lilly, that's $5 a month if you got five people on this plan. That's outrageous. Are you happy about this? And do you think it will stick? That's going to be the conversation we have. Is this too cheap? What are they going to do? Because we talked about the subscriber numbers and going up to a certain point of 100 million, let's say. Is this sustainable to be charging $5 a month for what is a $15 a month service?
You know, it's interesting. I think you were even in there for a little bit, but I had hosted a Spaces when this all broke, right? And kind of talked it out with different people from the community in real time, trying to wrap our heads around, could this really be $24.99? Is that the price? Does that make sense to have it that cheap? Because, you know, we've had this conversation already, and I've always kind of thought $30 seemed to make a lot of sense to me. But the more I'm starting to think about it, I can see this being the real price once it's rolled out everywhere. Ooh. That it is $25, $5 ahead, obviously, you know, if you have all five people on there, because what does it do? And again, I'm about to do some terrible math here. Okay. So,
you know,
yeah. So they're at 25 million right now, right? Let's say when this family plan comes out, they're now at 35, but of that 35, 15 million people have now converted to this family plan, right? You have 15 million family plan subs. 15 times five is what? What is that?
Bad math.
It's what, 90 million, right? Yeah, it's 90 million, something like that, right? But you see my point. Now, all of a sudden, their subscriber numbers that they can report, people that are subscribed to Game Pass and use and interacting with games in Game Pass, just skyrocketed because of this family plan, and you now have more people inside the ecosystem. And it isn't even about, all right, yeah, look, we don't know the math and the financials on how this thing is viable, but what it is going to do, it's going to get more people playing games, it's going to get more people engaging in games. And if you have quality content that people want to support and keep playing, like this Forza Horizon Hot Wheels DLC, you know, let's say Halo Infinite gets on track and their battle pass, you start thinking about the games that they're going to have and the extra content that's going to be a part of that, that you're going to have to purchase if you want to continue to play it, and the cosmetic items and all that. So there's now more people to monetize with your microtransactions, for lack of a better term, because of this family plan, because more people are now invested in the ecosystem. And let's keep it real here. That Activision deal closes. Now, all of a sudden, Xbox becomes the quote unquote home Call of Duty because it's day one on Game Pass. Family plan, boom. Now everybody that loves Call of Duty is getting it through Game Pass. And what does Call of Duty have? A ton of DLC that comes out that they're going to be able to monetize. So that was kind of my thought, you know, as I went through this and thought, yeah, they probably could get away at $25 a month for five people, because there's just that many more people now that are on Game Pass and that are, you know, interacting and monetizing it through microtransactions.
Yeah, I mean, it's well put right there, Paris, and way to think it through, because it is a lot. To me, I am stunned by that $5 number when we break it down, right? Because when you look at it, Xbox Live Ultimate includes Xbox Live Gold, the 100 games in the collection, PC, and cloud streaming. So it's almost like, is this the moment you would phase out Xbox Live Gold as a subscription service, right? Because now you're charging $5 less for what it would normally be at that $9 price. But there's going to be jabronis like me who aren't in a family plan and are still paying out of pocket $15 a month, right? But it is interesting that $5 a month seems pretty wild. Gary, you got five people to team up with on your family plan? Are you putting me on this?
No, I was just thinking. I was just thinking about that, about like what I would do with the five subs. So we have three people with Xbox accounts in our household, but we also have other family members in other states, mm-hmm. like in-laws and stuff. And you know, we could share. There's definitely option. We would, you know, none of those subs are going to be like sitting there gathering dust. Like they'll all get used. I mean, like I said, you can even you don't have to technically, even though you are like family to me, Mike. You don't technically have to be family, right? It's anyone in the same country you want to.
No, you got to get your legal documents all together to prove.
Yeah, that's right. We might need like a bullshit Vegas wedding or something to make this all, you know, above board. But like, we'll make it work. Paris can be the best man. We'll make it. We'll do one of those Elvis drive through chapels, and then you can have my game. You can be on my Game Pass family plan. It's like the green card for the 20th century. Yeah, and it is literally a green card as well. So this all works out very well. I think, you know, look, we talked about this before. This is the next logical step in the evolution of, you know, kind of the Game Pass offerings. It's something that people have been asking for a while, so it makes total sense. I remember when we were kind of prognosticating about this and throwing out different, would it be this price, would you get that much, like I think, you know, we threw out a lot of stuff, we kind of like shotgun approach to it, but I seem to remember we, like, at least one of our guesses was pretty close to where this seems to be ending up, like 25 for five basically, and I think it makes a lot of sense. The other thing that occurred to me about it is it might be a very nice way for Microsoft to kind of goose its subscriber numbers. Because, yeah, I mean, technically, they could argue that every time they sell a family plan, that's five new Game Pass subscribers, exactly. Right? And so if they want to be able to brag about having 20, 30, 40 million Game Pass subscribers, every time they sell a family plan, even if they're only using like four of those subs or whatever, they've sold you the sub. So they get to add five new subscribers to the numbers that they then get to go brag about.
And that was kind of my point is now you can do a little, not fudging, I guess is the wrong word, but like you're saying, you've sold five subs, whether they're being used or not, they're sold. So let's say 15 million people now take advantage of that. 15 times five is 90. I mean, that's that they're and they can obviously promote that and say, hey, we got this many people in Game Pass now. So I would think that would be the logic behind saying we're going to put this at an extremely affordable price to give you an incentive to want to jump on that. Because to your point, Gary, I'm immediately taking up four subs because it's me and three of my kids, right? So I still have an extra sub that I can give to another family member or a close friend, Mike. So, you know, think about it. A lot of people are going to do that. That's just the reality of it. And I'm sure they know that. I know there was also some talk about, would there be any restrictions on this? And it seems, and again, we don't know anything, but shout out to Jess Corden, because I know he did a lot of work on this, but it seems like they're going to adopt what you can already do with Office 365. That seems to kind of be the infrastructure that's in place to support this. So if that's the case, there might be a restriction that you can only share it with people that are in your country. So only people in the United States. I can't share it with someone in the UK or someone in Italy or something like that. But once you're a sub, you can have full advantage of Game Pass Ultimate. So that means cloud streaming, everything. So I would think in that sense, as long as you're in a participating company, once you are a sub, you should be able to still use Game Pass no matter where you go, because that's how it is right now. So I don't think anyone that signs on to that is going to have any type of restriction outside of the family all needs to be in the same country when you sign up.
Yeah, I'm really pumped up that they're leaning towards Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I think that was the big deal.
Yeah. You have to do that.
Are we just doing console? Are you going to let people choose console or PC? Ultimate is the right way to go. And yeah, the $5 still wows me. But Paris, you did say it so well, and I'm hooked on that one, is the money you'll make off of DLC and the microtransactions, right? That is where a lot of business subscriptions are going to now. And we do know that Xbox does not include the first-party DLC in their subscription services. Don't get me on the Hive Busters, y'all. I know that's the one-off, but still had to buy Forza Hot Wheels, right, with your Game Pass subscription. Yep. So they're going to make a ton of money off of microtransactions, and now five more people are going to get involved in their ecosystem, and buy is probably the target goal here. So pretty wowing, very exciting stuff. I guess I turn to you guys to wrap this up as the two heads of your families, right? What kind of rules or settings do you want? Or do you want it simply, I give that person their subscription, they do whatever they want? Because we've talked about the parental controls before. How much control do you want off of that?
Well, I would imagine, right? And this is where it all ties in. Anyone that's on your family plan is now subject to the family settings, the parental controls. So, you know, on my oldest daughter, I don't limit anything because she's basically an adult. But on my two younger ones, I have certain hours they can play, times, all that stuff set up. So even if now they're on Game Pass, all that stuff should still apply. So I would imagine anyone that you're adding to that, you're literally adding them to your family. I think, again, that's the whole point of it, right? So Mike, hey, if I'm adding you on the sub, man, that means I get to regulate your time, you know. But that's what I would imagine it would be, and how people want to enforce it or do anything with it obviously will be up to whoever the head of the account would be.
Okay. All exciting stuff. Gary, what are you into this? You excited about it?
I really like the idea of this as a way to fuck with your friends. Like you give a buddy of yours like your fifth Game Pass account, but then you put parental controls on it so you can fuck with them. That's fantastic. Yeah. What a great way to troll people. The pig.
I love that.
You're restricted to like E for everyone, gay.
Yeah. So yeah.
The final one before we get out of here is when do you think this is happening? We're testing it now. I mean, Paris, you know best. We test, we come back, we do the analysis, we work it out again, maybe another test phase. But when do you think we will truly see a Game Pass family plan rollout?
I would love to see it come out this holiday, because I think it would be a pretty big deal if you could tie that into the holiday season and gifting stuff and all that great stocking stuff. Right. But is that realistic if they're just now starting to test here in August in two countries? What does that rollout look like? Is that something by, I don't know, Thanksgiving, you can roll out to the United States and Canada as your first country, and then there'll be other countries as you go into 2023? I don't know, because I don't know how much of this infrastructure they need to test, like what's going on. But to your point, they're not going to put this out until they're 100% confident that it's going to be seamless to be able to do it. So if it's not ready by the holiday, then it's simply not going to come out this holiday, and it would be 2023. I would imagine, though, whenever Forza, whatever of the big three, Forza, Redfall, Starfield is out, probably Redfall or Forza, not Starfield. But the point is, once one of their three big games for the first half of 2023 comes out, I think you would want to have that family plan ready to go. Because, again, it's going to be a big selling point to tie in with, look, now our internal studios are starting to pump out these big AAA games that you're going to want to play. Oh, look, we got the family plan. Invite four members of your family to come with you on Game Pass day one. There you go. Hire me in marketing. I could do it. No, I'm kidding.
hire Paris right now. He's ready to rock and roll. Gary, what are you liking all of that? Hopefully the holiday, or would you expect longer?
I mean, I have no idea how long it takes to thoroughly test something like this, but I think that best case scenario, the holiday. I don't think it would be any sooner than that. Also makes sense. You know, you want to have some kind of offering around the holidays. There's probably not going to be any new hardware given all the supply chain issues that we're having. But maybe something like this is kind of a cool thing to put out there in the holiday season. Holidays, of course, is when families are getting together at, Thanksgiving and Christmas. I feel like a family plan card is, it would be something kind of very giftable, very Christmassy, to unwrap on Christmas Day is like a nice, family game pass for the whole family, for the next 12 months or whatever. Feels, if it feels right to me.
Yeah, it does feel right, but it also does feel so far away, you two. And actually, we have another story about a game that is being delayed and pushed so far away. But I'm going to tell you all about that right after a word from our sponsors.
No one. And The Rock means no one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially, ladies and gentlemen, when you've got bills due. Good thing there's now Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early with direct deposit. That's up to 2 more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. Waiting for your money, never good. Getting your money in advance, great. Who wouldn't want that? Chime is more than about just getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. Get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. Get started at chime.com/KFGames. That's chime.com/KFGames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on the payer. Where'd the sunglasses go? Chime.com/KFGames. That's chime.com/KFGames. Have you heard about the legendary underwear brand that's taken the podcast world by storm? Famous for their buttery soft undies and bralettes, MeUndies loves podcasts just as much as you do. It's like they're made for you, and you're made for them. You're made for each other. Now, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you know I love my MeUndies because they're the most comfortable underwear I've ever had, and because they have great patterns. As the king of Halloween, my candy corn pair never fails to make me smile. Everyone knows MeUndies for their super soft undies and comfy bralettes, but did you know they also make other stuff? We're talking about durable, cushy socks that will make your feet sing. They even make hoodies for your dog so you can match every important person in your life. Available in sizes XS to 4XL and tons of colors and prints, MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. Any first-time purchasers can get 20% off plus free shipping and returns. To get 20% off your first order, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
Guys, welcome back. Let's talk about delays. Everybody hates them, but they need to happen so we can get the best game possible and allow for those incredible teams to make the best game. Right now, yesterday, it was announced that Marvel's Midnight Suns has been delayed. The deets coming out of a Take-Two phone call, report says Take-Two's fiscal year ends in March 2023, so we can expect it sometime or before the end of March 2023. Being pushed out of this year, kind of upsetting because, of course, this is a Firaxis game. If you know XCOM, XCOM 2, these are really fun games, and they're working really hard to bring in the Marvel Universe into this kind of turn-based card video game amalgamation here. But very excited to have the Marvel name here. Sad to see it go. Guys, were any of you interested in this Marvel's Midnight Sun? Gary Whitta, this gets you at all? You an XCOM guy?
I think we're just kind of taking these delay announcements in our stride at this point, right? They're so, yeah. I mean, they are so commonplace in 2022. COVID keeps rolling on. There's all kinds of other issues going on in the world. Again, when I scroll through my Twitter feed now, I see that little, that block of text on a background, and I'm like, yep, another, before I even open it, I know another game has been delayed. it's just a question of, it really depends on like what is the stature of the game and how important is it to you. I think Firaxis is a tremendous team. Marvel's an interesting license, and I think Midnight Sun could be an interesting game, but I think, I personally kind of shrugged because to me that's kind of like it's not in my A list of games that I was eagerly anticipating. We were really fretting over, remember when Breath of the Wild got delayed and we were sweating over God of War Ragnarok going to get delayed. Like those are the big titles that, we have the meltdowns when they get delayed. Well, I mean, not so much a meltdown because again, we're so, fortunately, I think the community has become much more understanding of this kind of stuff. Usually when you see one of these announcements, you know, a few years ago, it would have been, fuck you, I want my game right away. Lots of petulant children throwing their toys out of the pram. Now what you see is a lot of people saying, hey, take your time, we get it, you know, deliver the game when you're ready. And I think the community, at least, you know, for all the toxicity that's still out there, that is one issue where I feel like the situation has improved a lot. We've become a lot more accepting of game delays, perhaps because we've seen what it looks like when they don't delay games and we get the cyberpunks and we get the games that shipped before they were ready, like, you know, and we have to deal with the aftermath of that, you know, for months and years afterwards. Nobody wants that anymore. We'd much rather wait. And again, given the circumstances in the world, like I said, we see these delays so often now. It is so commonplace that I think we've just kind of become inured to it a little bit. We're just kind of like, yep, there goes another one. And it's sad that that's the case, that this has become so commonplace. But the last couple of years have not been normal for anyone. And I think it's something that I think a lot of gamers have just kind of priced in at this point. We've come to expect it.
Yeah, I'm with Gary on that. I mean, that's pretty much it, in the sense that when I see a delay at this point, I'm not even disappointed. I'm just, okay, take your time. You know, it's not a big deal. We understand we're in unprecedented times. Things are going to be delayed. And kind of to your point, Gary, I think the community as a whole has pretty much accepted that at this point. You don't really see a lot of people being upset and, you know, throwing their controller across the room when their anticipated game gets delayed, because I'm honestly shocked when a game doesn't get delayed at this point, you know, to be perfectly honest with you. To the point of this one, Midnight Suns. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a game that was at the top of my list. Like, oh my God, I have to play it. Obviously, I'm a big Marvel fan and I like these characters. I do like XCOM, but I was still kind of in a wait and see mode to see how it played out versus, yep, day one, let me go pick this thing up. So, hey, if they're delaying it because they need more time, do it. I have zero issue with that. And to that point, it is funny how, like I said, I'm to the point where I expect delays. I've really been going back and replaying some games that I haven't either played in a long time or jumping into backlog and trying out something that I haven't played at all, because now's kind of that time. I feel we're at a point in the gaming industry where we have so many different games that we could be playing.
That's the thing. It's not like there's nothing else to do.
Exactly. Right?
Like we've all got these shameful backlogs that we talk about all the time. Honestly, I sometimes feel like when a game gets delayed, what I'm almost like, it's doing me a favor, because take your time. Like, I've got plenty of other things to be getting on with. I've got so many backlog games to clear that, you know, the problem used to be the opposite when especially in the immediate to the holiday season, and so many games pile up. And even if, you know, we're fortunate enough to get codes and we can afford to buy a bunch of games because we're like hardcore enthusiasts, but like the one thing that we don't have more than anyone else is time, right? In fact, in many cases we've got less, especially you and me, parents, we've got kids, you know, we have to be very, very careful about how we ration our gaming time. It's like we've gone from like feast to famine, right? I mean, I don't know about famine, because I think there'll be plenty of interesting games, but, you know, in years past, holiday season past, it was like too much all at once. Everyone's, you know, unloading all their big AAA games and their award contenders and their big blockbusters from like September to December, and something's got to give. This year, what I'm hearing about, and I've seen a lot of articles written about this, is like a AAA drought, right? There'll be Ragnarok, but for the most part, we're not getting, obviously, you know, Call of Duty, you get that every year, but there's not going to be this big glut of AAA games vying for your attention this year. And honestly, maybe that's not such a bad thing.
I agree. I'm with you. It's so funny, because I'd even tweeted it today, because someone had saw me talking about this on Gamertag Radio last week. I've been playing Gears 5 again, just for the hell of it, right? And let me tell you right now, I'm playing this thing on my PC. I have a 3090, just for context, but I'm playing this on insane settings. This is one of the most visually impressive games I've ever played on PC. It is just that good. The lighting that they have in this game is just phenomenal. And then I flip over to the Series X, while it's not as good, my God, it's good enough. It's really, really good. I mean, Gears 5 on the Series X is very comparable to a high-end PC from a fidelity standpoint. That's how good it looks. And just playing through it again, and I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago, what sparked all this was me playing the original Gears of War via the cloud. And I'm like, I wonder, going from this, because it held up very well, how does it feel going to the latest version of it? And it's so fascinating to see how they've slightly, and they've improved things so much, but they've done it in such a subtle way that you really feel it, that drastic shift when you go from the original all the way up to five. But slowly but surely over the years, they've just improved the cover system, the aiming system, the way the weapons are, like all this different stuff they've added into Gears over the years. And it's culminated with what we have with five. And I know I'm getting off track on this, but yeah, man, I mean, that's because we had a backlog to play. That's because we got other stuff to do that I just started going down that rabbit hole and doing that, you know, and I've been doing it with other things. Like I've been jumping back into Fallout 3 just for the hell of it, messing around on that. I went back to Psychonauts 2 because there were some achievements wanted to get. Yeah, I had to, because there was achievements I didn't get through that first run, and then I got distracted playing other stuff. But that's the point. There's so many games out there to play, you know, that it's, yeah, I'm fine if something got delayed, because there's plenty of options.
Well, I'm so glad you're playing Gears 5. What a great game. What a great game, everybody. That's a terrific game.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want to, we've talked about delays this whole year, right? And we've talked about games saying goodbye. And we know kind of the big notable ones, Stalker 2, Breath of the Wild 2, Starfield and Redfall. But I do want to know before we get out of this one is, what is your most anticipated game that has been delayed this year that you're looking forward to the most? Because for me, I wrote down a couple, and I know I have one special for Paris on the side. But I am excited for two, and I'm going to talk about one really quick and then one I'm really excited for. I do want to see what Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is all about. I think this is a game we all have kind of big question marks about, of Rocksteady going from that single player that we love into a four-player co-op and what that will look like with this kind of ragtag crew. Will it be any fun? Will we get bored of it halfway through? What will this really be? But when you have a studio like Rocksteady, you got to get excited and hope for the best here. So I'm really hoping this delay elevates it. But for me, my most anticipated game is something I've been talking about for a while now, Exomecha. This is that game which is like the indie Battlefield Power Rangers looking game. And it looks like they don't have a new release date. And it was once again delayed out of this year because they added a lot of new content and they need more time to polish and prepare for a post-launch content launch, which I really like seeing. They're preparing for that, as we saw with other first-person shooter games. But this game, to me, gives me the Tribes PC game, Gary, that you and I always talk about from back in the day. It gives me Battlefield, Big Team Battle, and Halo. This is the game that I want to play so, so much, and I cannot wait for it to finally release. But another delay to this one is a little heartbreaking because I am pumped up to play Exomecha. That is high on my list right now.
That one they showed originally, wasn't that, this is when the Series X was debuting, but it was that, it was when the fridge meme came out. It was when they did that event like in May, right? And they were showing some smaller, that's the first time they showed that.
I believe so.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you'll recognize it. It has like this scarab beetle that's currently on YouTube. They have the big Power Rangers mech suit. We saw like a robot dinosaur. Like this will be Battlefield cranked up to 50 on a kind of a AA level. You know, I'm not going to expect the polish of a Call of Duty here, but I am looking really forward to seeing what this team brings, because this is going to be a fun first-person shooter in the space for sure. Paris, I alluded to you earlier because I know most likely what you're going to say, but like, what is your most anticipated delayed game so far?
So let me say two, because I think you know one of them, but it's not the one that you think. So Replaced obviously is one that I'm highly anticipating. We know what happened over in the Ukraine has delayed that into 2023. We'll obviously see what the date on that's going to be, but I that gave me the Death's Door vibes, just so people know, the first time I saw that at the showcase in 2021. So I'm really looking forward to that. The second one would be Stalker 2, for literally the same exact reasons that I just said would replace. But mine is Starfield. It's Starfield. I actually caught a little heat online because I had actually said this on Twitter the other day, because I went back and I figure, all right, all the hype has died down. No one's really talking about it anymore. Let me go back and watch that Todd Howard presentation again at the last showcase, finally showing off Starfield. And we talked about it before, but we know why it got delayed. It needed to be optimized more, 100%. But stripping all that out and just listening to him describe what Starfield is and seeing what you're going to be able to do in that world, absolutely, of the known games of 2023, is my most anticipated. I can't wait to dive into that universe or galaxy or whatever you want to call it and just go explore. and just live the life of a space pirate if I so choose, or do whatever you can. But all the things that Bethesda brings to an RPG in that type of setting really excites me. So that would be my most anticipated delayed game for 2023.
We're watching the footage live, and it's just, it gives me the goosebumps because I'm so excited for Starfield. It's ridiculous. Gary, you know, you, me, and Paris, we're taking a lot of L's on our Fantasy Critic League because our picks have been delayed. Like, we're taking a lot of losses.
We need to
here,
sit
Gary.
You guys down, log in, drop games, and bid for games.
I've had people left at this point.
I know. We've not been maintaining that
no,
at all.
No, I have not.
It's and basically
I have
did bet. The initial auction and then walked away.
Yeah.
All I do is brag about the fact that I picked Kirby. That's it. That was like my one shining moment. You all laughed at me.
But Gary, a lot of your games have been delayed, so it's an easy one for you. Of what are you most looking forward to that's been delayed into next year or beyond?
Well, for me, it is Starfield. Even though I was slightly underwhelmed by the reveal that they did, I think it's because the hype levels were so unrealistically high. I feel like anything was going to be underwhelming in terms of like what I had built up in my imagination. But I still have a lot of faith in the game. Like Paris, I ever since Mass Effect 2, I've wanted that big world that big sci-fi world that I can just get completely lost in, and this is the only game on the horizon that feels like it can come close to scratching that itch. For my wife, I would have to say Breath of the Wild 2, because she loves those games. She played Breath of the Wild to death. I really enjoy watching her play. I'm quite certain that that's her most anticipated game. And then just as a wild card, I'm going to throw out Forspoken, you know, because I worked on it back in the early days of the story and world building. And I'm just, and then, you know, they went away and like worked on it for 4 years after I was done. I'm just very, very interested to see what came out the other end and like how much of the stuff that I contributed in the early days might still be in there. How much survived. Plus it does look cool. So I'm interested to keep an eye on that too.
I was hoping you were going to pull that one out, Gary, because I know I receive a lot of questions because people want to know about your work on that. And they want to learn more about how you contribute and what you contribute to games like that, because they don't really get to see the behind the scenes stuff. So maybe one day we can ask you all the questions.
I think when the game comes out and they do like, you know, their real PR round on it, I'll probably be able to talk about it in more depth. But again, the bottom line is like, yeah, I did some very early kind of foundational, you know, world building stuff, came up with the name Athia, which is the name of the world, and like rules of magic and things like that. But again, they were like, thanks, now we've got it from here. And they went away with a different set of writers and actually did like the making of the game. And again, sometimes when you go through a process like that, you never quite know like how much of the early stuff has been retained and how much of it, you know, makes it through to the finished thing. So just because I had like my hands in it very, very early on, it's going to be interesting to see like, well, like when I'm playing it, I'm going to be like, oh, I remember that from 4 years ago, or, you know, or not. I just don't know. We'll see.
All right. Very cool. Let's keep it going. Gary, another one, 2 weeks in a row, special controller piece of news for you. Now, last week we had Jez Corden, friend of the show, possibly teasing a release of an Xbox Elite Series 3. Gary, we need to bring you back down to earth, because now we have a possible tease of an Elite Series 2 controller, but in a brand new colorway right now. So this has been up on Twitter for the day right now. Twitter user Rebs Gaming at Mr. Rebs has shared a video of what could be a brand new version of the Xbox Elite Series 2 controller, but in a white colorway with what looks to be an official box, the carrying case, charging pack, and everything you'd expect out of the packaging. And it possibly could be coming this holiday 2022 for the Xbox product line. Paris, did I make you laugh over there? What do you think about this one?
No, I'm laughing because obviously we had that speculation last week about all this stuff.
Yep.
And I had somebody whisper in my ear, you're dead wrong. There's no Elite 3 coming. And I was like, okay. So I have to laugh. And then obviously this leak. So it makes sense now what Jez was alluding to and speculating on. This makes a lot more sense. I can honestly see this being announced at Gamescom, because, and I could be wrong, but I feel like that's when the Elite 2 was announced, was at Gamescom 2019, because I remember going hands-on with it at Gamescom 2019. So maybe this, again, is the right venue to be able to show off this white version of it, which I would still hope there is a little more update to build quality, and it's not just a color change, as we were speculating last week. You know, so Mike, you don't run through 100 of them, even though I seem to have absolutely no problem with mine. It's
again,
great
user error 100%.
But yeah, I mean, hey, it's I'm good with it. I mean, it's a different color. Let's see what the pricing on it's going to look like too.
Really, the Elite Series 2 controller is perfect, right? Like,
yeah.
When I read all the things of like what people want from the Elite Series 3 controller, it's the share button and better build durability. Nobody's bringing anything really groundbreaking to the mix whenever I read those comment sections, right? So it is like odd, like you said, Paris, like, do you really need that? And it's just such a small variation of just put the share button on there and I'll be completely happy. That's the only thing it's missing in my mind.
And that's kind of the bummer seeing this, that it still doesn't have a share button. I mean, that really is, and you don't have to call it an Elite 3, which should be a complete overhaul of everything they're doing, but they could do the Elite 2.5 or something and say, boom, we put the share button on it. Here's a different color to it as well. I think that's the only thing that's missing from this, making it arguably the best controller you can have right now.
Yeah. Gary, of course, I inform you of this because you are Mr. Controller out of the three of us here on this panel. Of course, what do you think of the white? My only issue, Gary, from what I see is, you know, of course, we've really enjoyed these black rubberized grips on the bottom of the handles, right? And everybody likes them. But man, oh man, it really limits the color of the controller. When this gentleman pulls it out, if you're watching on YouTube, you're going to see, of course, the flash of white, but then just massive rubberized grips on the sides of these controllers. Do you think it should all be white, Gary, or do you like this colorway, this scheme that it is?
I did kind of halfway call this last week, by the way, when we were talking about like what we would want from a Series 3 controller. And we talked about how like putting it through, having a design lab option would be great. Although, again, that's probably not compatible with what I imagine is a much more involved manufacturing process for the Elite controller. But I said at least like give us some color options, even if it's just two or three. So it seems like they are doing that with this alternate color. I actually really like the black and white colorway. It seems like they've almost taken a bit of a design cue from the DualSense controller, which I love that look. The DualSense, I think, is the best looking controller. I still prefer to use a Series X controller, but I think the DualSense looks to me like the highest end controller. Like, it looks like a really serious piece of equipment. It's beautifully designed. That black and white, it just looks like it looks like something out of a science fiction movie. I think that's really, really cool. And it looks like they have adopted some of that aesthetic. In terms of the share button, I don't know, like, it feels like if they just want to sell controllers, like, add a share button and call it a series three, and all the diehards out there have got to have like the latest one are gonna go get it. That said, it's funny, when I was complaining about the share button last week, I'd actually forgotten something that I had done when I was playing Halo Infinite. You can easily map a share button onto the Elite controller, right? You've got the paddles, you've got the shift button. Mm-hmm. It's actually when I was playing Halo Infinite with the Elite controller, because it was so rare for me to get a kill in Halo because I'm so bad at it, I recorded pretty much every kill I ever got as like proof that I got some kills. And so I was like, I want my share button. So I actually mapped it to one of the paddles underneath. Which is very easy to do with the software that they give you. I think they'll sell a bunch of these to collectors. Whether or not the white is gonna, you know, in time, we'll see if it starts to discolor at all. I don't know. The rubberized grip, again, I would need to feel it in the hand. I would just say, I can't remember how the Elite controller feels different in the hand. I've called it out before. As much as I don't like the aesthetic of it, I don't know if either of you two have held that Forza Horizon controller, but it has that kind of steering wheel rubber effect on the bottom. And that to me is I wish every Xbox controller had that. It's so grippy. It feels so good in the hand. I would love to see that. And on the durability, it's funny. I know I've heard people say about, oh, you know, eventually the control, you know, if you really beat them down, the Xbox controller, the Elite controllers start to break down. I'm kind of surprised to hear that, because the one thing that like immediately hits you the first time you put an Elite or an Elite 2 controller in your hand compared to the original one is like, it feels like a serious piece of, like, it's heavier, it feels sturdier. Yeah. You can tell it's made of like higher quality material. I'm actually kind of surprised that there have been these occurrences of people complaining about, you know, failures and things like that, because the first time you get it, you're like, man, this is like a really robust controller. I don't know if they're kind of stealthily doing revisions, like maybe when they do a teardown on this new white one, they'll find out that there's been some kind of quiet, you know, internal revisions. I don't know, but I don't know why they just don't take the next step and just call it a Series 3, put a share button on there to bring it into parity with, you know, the standard Xbox controller. It just seems like a no-brainer to me. I'm sure they'll get around to eventually, and this white option is just kind of an interstitial step along the way.
So exciting stuff. Keep an eye out for that one. If this is to be real or not, we will see. Maybe a great little holiday release for all of you. But a white colorway would be nice to mix up with the just generic Black Elite controllers. Let's talk about one final story before we get out of the XCast this week, and that is your Xbox Series S could receive a small, nice little boost to help you out there. I'm going to pull from IGN.com by Taylor Lyles, who just does incredible reporting over there. So I'll read directly from the report right now. Microsoft recently released a new Xbox software development kit, which gives developers access to more memory. The change should help improve the performance when playing games on the Xbox Series S. As spotted by The Verge, the latest game development kit frees up hundreds of additional megabytes of memory for the Xbox Series S game developers. Quote, this gives game developers more control over memory, which can improve graphics performance in memory-constrained conditions, end quote. Microsoft's games dev team noted in the June game development kit video. While this should help provide a much-needed boost to the Xbox Series S, it will take time for developers to optimize games, and there are no promises that games already out on the Xbox Series S will get a patch to improve their overall performance. Gary, yourself, Paris, myself have all hyped up and really praised the Xbox Series S and what that's capable of. You see the team still continuing to tinker with it and keep it relevant here for developers and for this next generation. Are you happy to see this? And do you expect this to happen a lot over the coming years as we've seen kind of mid-generation boosts come out with different console variations? Do you think they'll have to do this a lot to this console?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
No, you go, Paris.
No, I was just going to say, I'm happy to see it because, hey, if they can squeeze more performance out of this and it helps developers, you know, optimize games better on the Series S, 100% do it. The second part to your question that I was going to say really quick is I'm still not convinced they're going to do a mid-generation hardware refresh. So if they don't, it wouldn't surprise me to continue to optimize on this current hardware and try and squeeze every last ounce of power that they can out of it so that as these developers get more familiar with the hardware and they're able to, you know, want to do more ambitious things with their games on these platforms, they'll have the power to do it. So yeah, this is good news to see that the S is getting its performance boost.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool little piece of news, the idea that they can do these kind of back end performance tweaks that don't, you know, require anything on part of the user. Right? Like you said, there's no new hardware revision. You'd have to go like buy anything else to plug into it to boost the performance. It just happens, and you're the beneficiary of it. So that's really great to see. And again, this is you know, making a really good console. As I've said a million times before, the best console for most people. It's absolutely true. For a box that is, and the Xbox Series S is a console that's already punching above its weight. Right, it's basically almost half the price and basically half the size of the Series X. Anytime, because I'm obsessed with like the Digital Foundry deep dive, you know, performance teardowns that they do with the little frame rate graphs and everything. One of the things that is very, very common in that is like they're often quite surprised by just how good the Series S version is compared to the Series X. It's actually not that much of a performance drop off. There's always trade offs, but like it's not like the Series S is like the poor man's version of any game. The Series S version at least always like holds its own pretty darn well. And if you don't particularly care about 4K, as I've said, I think a lot of people, you know, really don't or notice the difference. It's really an amazing piece of hardware. And just on Paris's, this has nothing to do with the performance boost again, which I think is great. But whether or not there is a mid-generation rev at any point, the only one thing we've talked about before that is holding back the Series S, and it's the only caveat I would give when I recommend it to people, is just be aware that that hard drive space is going to run out real fast. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see, for me, the biggest winner would be a Series S, like mid-generation refresh with a terabyte drive. That to me would make it an absolute no-brainer.
More memory, please, is right. More hard drive space. Can I go on a what grinds my gears moment really quick before we end this
Mike,
show? What grinds my gears? Okay, let me bring up another one, because Paris talked about him jumping into some older games like Gears 5 and beyond. This weekend, I played Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019 campaign. I'm making my way through some campaigns. Titanfall 2, you're this weekend to make Paris happy and talk about it on the show. But here's my issue, and the same thing happened on Gears 5. We had this issue where games install size were getting out of hand, and everybody was like, hey, here's the deal. The new vision is we're going to let you install just certain parts of the video game, whether it be the campaign, the multiplayer, the Horde mode, whatever it is. On Gears 5 and Call of Duty had this option as well. Well, here I am thinking, okay, well, that's great. I have limited internet up here in the mountains. It's not as fast. It's going to be tough to download everything. Mind you, Call of Duty has like blended into weird, one weird mishmash of Warzone and Call of Duty. It's too much, right? And so they offer me the opportunity, just like Gears 5 did when I first clicked on it, said, what do you want to download? I said, just the campaign, please, sir. I would like that. Download that. Jump in. What does it say? Nope, you don't have the right stuff. I go, what in the is happening? So then I download the campaign texture pack. Download that. And thinking to myself, Gary, here I go. I should be good to go. It says, no, you don't have that correct again. So now I have to download every single piece to make it say that it's good to go. So I've downloaded multiplayer. I've downloaded Warzone. I've downloaded everything known to man. And all I want is to play this campaign. And it's happened twice now because it happened in Gears for me as well, where it still just doesn't click the correct thing. I'm now on the warpath. I just want you to put the game out. I, as the consumer, will delete games off my hard drive and I'll just adjust accordingly. I don't want to keep getting hit with you're not getting the right content and having to re-download things, because that really sucks. Because I went from Friday to Saturday, then Saturday night, I'm finally able to play after downloading way too much. So quick moment of what's grinding Mike's gears. Just weird installs. I would just like to download everything. I'll figure it out from
there. I have a similar complaint, and it's that moment in the install process when the little Xbox logo flashes up and it tells you that the game is ready to play, even though it's only like a halfway installed. I gave up clicking on that, even though I may be like really, really keen to play the game. I wait for the full install because I had too many instances where I was like, oh, ready to play. How cool. And again, it's a nice feature to advertise. Start playing the game before it's even fully installed, like get into the game right away. But every time that I've done it, the version of the game that is quote unquote ready to play is like half-assed, where all the features that you want aren't even there yet. It's playable, but like barely. Right. And so that whole like ready to play right now, like that's some bullshit. Wait for the game to finish installing properly.
And you're only just slowing the download down now too. Right. Then you're going to go back to the Xbox dashboard, like a game is live. You need to suspend it. And you're like, okay, fine. I won't play my play now mode in FIFA right now. But quick little grind my gears. Before we get out of here, here's a quick update for Game Pass for the first half of August that you need to know about. Out now, Ghost Recon Wildlands is available for cloud, console, and PC. Little Ubisoft love right there, so go check that one out. You also have Turbo Golf Racing for cloud, PC, and Xbox Series X and S. That's an ID at Xbox game. I have played it. I think it is a very fun time for an hour or two with your friends. It is Rocket League meets golf. It is fun. It has crossplay for you and your PC friends if they're on PC Game Pass. I think it's a pretty good time, but I don't think I'll play it more than a weekend.
If you ever find yourself needing to challenge Andy Cortez in a game and you need a guaranteed win, challenge him with this game because he's so bad at it. So bad.
So
go to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays to watch him play and probably be the worst at golf he's ever been. It's really sad to watch.
Out now, Two Point Campus on cloud, console, and PC. I'll talk about that next week with all of you. August 11th, a game for Paris and Khalif, Cooking Simulator on cloud, console, and PC. Will this be where we settle the beef virtually? Maybe we could have a fun stream of that one, David.
I got him good with that one when I saw it, because I saw it before he did, and I was like, Khalif, there's something on Game Pass for everyone, even you. Your prayers have been answered.
I love that. Then of course on August 11th you have Expeditions Rome on PC and Offworld Trading Company on PC. That's an ID at Xbox game. For leaving on PC or leaving on August 15th, make sure to go play these: Boyfriend Dungeon, Curse of the Dead Gods, Library of Runia, Starmancer, and Train Sim World 2. Gary, another simulation game that you should probably check out before it's gone.
I have it on PC. I love those Train Sim World games.
And that will end this week's Kind of Funny XCast. Of course, we went a whole episode without checking on Paris and his Elden Ring expedition, because we did talk Elden Ring. I let him slide because I know he's going to tell me when he's ready to talk about it. But I want everybody to know I went the whole episode and I said, you know what, Mike? I'll let him slide this time. So Paris, you're off the hook until next time for something fun like that. Gary and Paris, it has been a great week spent with the both of you. It's Tuesday, aka really Wednesday for all you watching and listening out there. So make it through the work week, make it through the school week, have that second half of the week boost here with the Kind of Funny XCast, and we will catch you back here next week. On behalf of Gary, Paris, and Barrett, and myself, thank you all so much, and play some games, y'all. Peace.